Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I am your host, Tony Serino, and this is your daily dose of all things Steelers. Yes, I know it's Wednesday and it should be crossover Wednesday here on the Locked On Steelers podcast. Unfortunately, Ross from over the Locked On Saints podcast, he is on vacation this week, and so he and I were not able to connect to record this podcast. But instead, I got a great one for you. I got Christopher Carter again. We talked to him at the end of last week, broke down all these changes the Steelers were making defensively and whether or not those changes were the right ones to make against Tom Brady. Turns out none of those changes actually happened. Artie Burns saw the field for like three plays and then he was on the bench and the Steelers went back to their normal defensive lineup. I want to talk to Christopher Carter about, number one, why? Was it because of that play with Artie Burns? Was it because of the Hogan play that led to Artie Burns getting yanked? Remember, Mike Tomlin said after the game, that's not Artie's fault. That play was not Artie Burns' fault, and yet he didn't see the field after that. Didn't see a whole lot of Cam Sutton. Jordan Dangerfield didn't enter into it. I mean, the Steelers kind of went with their normal personnel, but they had such success against Brady. We'll talk to Christopher Carter about that today. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Tony Serino. You can find more of this podcast by going to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find podcasts. Search Locked On Steelers. Hit the subscribe button. Get your daily dose. You can follow me on Twitter, at Steeler Country. You can find us on Facebook. Search Locked On Steelers. Hit that like button. Make sure you also join the Facebook group. And you can now find us on Instagram at Locked On Steelers. And let's start today with some news and notes. The Pro Bowl rosters were announced on Tuesday evening. I know it's silly to argue about Pro Bowl rosters because it's the Pro Bowl. Who cares? No one watches the Pro Bowl, right? I mean, it's what happens in between. It's the football game that's on in between the AFC Championship games or the championship games and the Super Bowl. But, I mean, do you really watch it? You put it on in the background and you're doing something else, right? I mean, no one's actually watching that football game. But yet, here we are. We get all up in arms about who made it, who didn't, who got snubbed. And yes, there was a Steeler that got snubbed this year. So let's go over who made it and who didn't. Six Steelers elected to the Pro Bowl in 2018. Running back James Conner, wide receiver Antonio Brown, center Marquise Pouncey, guard David DeCastro, tackle Alejandro Villanueva, and interior lineman Cam Hayward. Cam Hayward making it as an interior lineman and not a defensive end, which is his true position in the Steelers 3-4. Because of the fact that, look, you look at DNs around the AFC and he's not gonna make it. You know, when you talk about guys like TJ Watt and Myles Garrett and Melvin Ingram, the three players from the AFC that were elected to the Pro Bowl this year. He wasn't gonna make it over those guys. I mean, look, he had 12 sacks a year ago. Right? He had a much better year in 2017 statistically and didn't make the Pro Bowl because he was listed as a D end and not an interior lineman. So credit to the Steelers for changing that on the ballot, getting him in there as an interior lineman and getting him into the Pro Bowl. Congratulations to Hayward for that. Running back James Conner makes it. Now, I know that might seem a little strange, especially today as we just watched Jalen Samuels have such a big game against the Patriots. And Conner, you know, in a what have you done for me lately type of league, look, Conner hasn't played in a couple weeks because of injury, and he didn't play well in the three or four games prior to getting injured. So, you know, I mean, I guess that you can kind of question that one a little bit, but here's what I'll say to that. James Conner is the reason why no one talks about Le'Veon Bell anymore. Right? The Le'Veon Bell story died the day he didn't sign because the Steelers have a perfectly adequate running back in James Conner. He's not on Le'Veon Bell's level just yet, but being elected to the Pro Bowl is because he is that good. I mean, he's among the best running backs in football, maybe not the best running back in football like Le'Veon Bell was. And so the talk of Le'Veon Bell went away because of the play of James Conner, and credit to him for that. Let's remember the good times with James Conner because he had quite a few this year, and I'm looking forward to him getting back into a Steeler uniform this Sunday against the Saints. Wide receiver Antonio Brown making the Pro Bowl. A bit of a down year for AB, right? I mean, he's going to finish the year somewhere around probably 1,300, maybe 1,400 yards in 2018. That's a down year for AB, a guy who has been so prolific in recent years, but he's elected to the Pro Bowl. And then they got it right here, the Pro Bowl did, in getting Pouncey, DeCastro, and Villanueva, three of the five starting offensive linemen on the Steelers elected to the Pro Bowl. Look, it's inarguable. That has been the best unit for this team all year. It has driven a lot of the success that you've seen this team have. And part of the reason why Connor's played so well in 2018 is because of that offensive line. It's why Jalen Samuels was able to have the big game that he had against the Patriots. It's why Ben Roethlisberger is having career numbers as far as yardage. Because he's able to be, you know, he's upright. He's able to have time to look down the field. And that's because the offensive line giving him protection there. They got the right three guys. you know, Pouncey, that center, DeCastro, one of the best guards in football, and Alejandro Villanueva at left tackle. Great story for Villanueva there, getting elected to the Pro Bowl. You know, the other guys, Ramon Foster is very good, maybe a little underrated as a guard in this league. And then at right tackle, it's too hard. I mean, look, Filer's played really well, but you can't elect him to the Pro Bowl because, you know, he only played a couple games. He's a backup. I mean, he's very good in the spot that he's in coming off the bench and having to replace a guy like Marcus Gilbert for so many weeks now. Filer's played really well, but they got the right three guys there on the offensive line. Glad to see three Steelers elected to the Pro Bowl. Now, let's get to the player who did not make it, Juju Smith-Schuster. So you look at AB's numbers. You look at AB's numbers this year, and this got him in. 90 catches, 1,112 yards, 13 touchdowns, 14 plays of 20 yards or more, right? Those are pretty good numbers. I mean, those are not bad numbers by any stretch. Again, he's going to finish the year with likely right around 1,300 yards probably if he goes, for 100 in these next two games. Actually, he's probably going to finish closer to like 1,250. But regardless, Antonio Brown had a, you know, quote-unquote down year and still had well over 1,000 yards. He's going to be right up there in the top 10 receiving yards in the league. He's likely going to have 100-plus catches this year. But you look alongside him. In fact, you look across the field from him at Juju, who's now playing more outside than he is inside. 95 catches to AB's 90. 1,274 yards to AB's 1,112. Only 6 touchdowns to AB's 13. And, you know, look, AB is a touchdown machine. I'm not taking that away from him. But 16 plays of 20-plus yards or more to Antonio Brown's 14. Juju has been statistically even better than Antonio Brown in every category other than touchdowns. He's caught more balls. He has a better catch percentage than Antonio Brown does, catching 95 of the 141 targets that have gone his way, whereas Antonio Brown has only caught 90 of the 149. Juju's been fantastic this year. Now, I understand why they didn't put Juju in, because AB is in some ways making it on reputation. Not on reputation alone, don't get me wrong. Antonio Brown has played really well in 2018. Not AB level, but, you know, AB level is, you know, far, far and away the best receiver in the league. He's having a down year, and so he's making it on reputation a little bit. But then I look around the AFC, and I kind of get where they're coming from, right? I mean, who are you taking off this list to put Juju on? DeAndre Hopkins, Tyreek Hill, Keenan Allen? That's the list of other receivers in the AFC that made the Pro Bowl. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins is having a fantastic year. Keenan Allen, same thing. Tyreek Hill, we're talking about these prolific offenses that are putting up 30, 40 points a week. You have to put those guys on. So I get why Juju's didn't make it. It's kind of sad to me, though, because Juju deserved to make it this year. Now, another thing that's going to get said about Juju as well, he's getting those numbers because he plays on the same team as Antonio Brown. That's a bit of a BS answer, if you ask me. You know, Juju, if you put him on another team, is he going to be any less successful? I don't think so. You look at the combat catches that he's making. You look at the big plays that he's making. You know, the 97-yarder that he caught against Denver. The big plays down the sideline. Yeah, he's such a, you know, and the mismatch that he is when he plays inside, which is really his more natural position, although he's having to play more outside now. I don't buy into that. Like, he is in an advantageous position because he plays in the same offense as Antonio Brown, but don't use that against him in saying he shouldn't make the Pro Bowl. I don't agree with that at all. So, sad to see Juju didn't make it. Now, other people will say, hey, how come Ben's not making it? Because, you know, he leads the league in a lot of categories. The problem with Ben is he's throwing too many interceptions this year. He just is. I mean, the number, look, people don't take this into account, right? The kind of interception percentage, because his interception percentage is fine. It's 2.6%. It's been his career average. So, you know, he's not throwing, as a percentage of the number of attempts, more interceptions than he normally does. He's just throwing the ball more, right? He's throwing the ball more, and that's why he's putting up the kind of numbers and the number of interceptions. I think the number of interceptions is probably what's keeping him out. Now, you look at some of the other quarterbacks. Rivers and Mahomes were obviously going to make it. Should Roethlisberger make it over Tom Brady? I'm not going to argue that one. I'm really not. You know, Ben's thrown 15 interceptions this year. He's looked shaky at times. He's had some struggles with accuracy, struggles with deep balls. Tom Brady's thrown 24 touchdowns, 9 interceptions to Ben Roethlisberger, who has thrown, 30 touchdowns and 15 interceptions. Am I going to argue Ben over Tom Brady? No, I mean, you know, not really. I don't know that Ben Roethlisberger is playing at a Pro Bowl level right now. I think, you know, I want to give the Pro Bowl to players who are playing at the top of their game. Well, I guess me saying this now is actually arguing against AB, but regardless, you know, Ben is leaving a lot of points on the field, a lot of plays on the field right now. I understand why he's not making it to the Pro Bowl. I'm not saying Ben's having a bad year or anything like that. I'm not saying that. I'm saying he's, you know, he's not among the best quarterbacks in the league right now in his play on the field. Forget about stats. Throw the stats out. The play on the field for Ben could be better. And in that way, I can understand why he didn't make the Pro Bowl. All right. That'll do it for this. We'll go to break here. But when we come back, Christopher Carter of DK Pittsburgh Sports will join me today to talk about that game against the Patriots. What happened out there? How were the Steelers so successful on defense when all those changes we talked about, Chris and I talked about last week, none of them actually happened? What happened there with that? We'll talk about that right after this. This Sunday, the Steelers have a huge showdown with the New Orleans Saints, and this single game will go a long way to clearing up the playoff picture. In fact, it could clinch a playoff berth for the Pittsburgh Steelers. It could also go a long way for you to win huge cash prizes. Single game fantasy football is the newest way to play at DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football. If you've been thinking about trying DraftKings, now is the time. DraftKings has taken fantasy football from just 1 week to just one game, making it easier to draft your lineup. All you have to do is draft six players from the Steelers-Saints game, one captain and five other players. Your captain will earn 1.5 times the points. Go for value with a guy like Eli Rogers or for star power with a guy like Antonio Brown. It's simple. Six players from one game. Just stay under the salary cap and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Go to DraftKings.com or download the app now. Use the code LOCKEDON to enter a single game fantasy football contest for free this week with your first deposit and compete for your share of over $1 million in total prizes. That's code LOCKEDON only at DraftKings, the game inside the game. A minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. All right, no crossover Wednesday here on the Locked On Steelers podcast. Unfortunately, Ross from the Locked On Saints podcast is on vacation, so he and I couldn't connect this week. Hopefully, I'll get someone else who covers the Saints on later this week. But instead, we have Christopher Carter from DK Pittsburgh Sports. He joins us weekly. Love having him on. Chris, how you doing?
I'm great. Tony, how are you, man?
Very, very good. The Steelers got a big win on Sunday against the Patriots, really saving their season. Now, you and I talked, it was just a couple days ago, about all the changes the Steelers were going to be making on defense in this game. Artie Burns is going to start. We're going to see Cam Sutton instead of Mike Hilton. Jordan Dangerfield might play a little bit. None of that really happened, right?
In fact, forget all of it.
Yeah, forget all of that. Let's start with the Artie Burns play and what happened there. A lot of confusion on this one. So Artie Burns involved in the Chris Hogan play. Tomlin says it wasn't Artie Burns' fault. That wasn't his responsibility. But we didn't see Artie Burns again in the football game. What do you see on that play?
So live, I was like, man, that's definitely Artie Burns if he's not back on the field. And that's a reasonable take for most people to have. But when you get the sky view and you see the all 22 and how it broke down, it actually makes sense when Tomlin said, hey, that's a coach that was on us. He was referring to the coaching and the preparing of that moment and not on Burns. And I'll explain why. If you look at the breakdown of the play, and I know we're doing a podcast, it's audio, there's no film. But if you can see when the Patriots, they motioned Chris Hogan from the right side of the field to the left. And when they did that, Joe Hayden, who was closer to the line of scrimmage, backed off. And when Joe Hayden backed off and he gave about like an 8 to 10 yard cushion, that shows to me that he switched into a zone. And you saw him talking to Sean Davis and the other defenders. What Dale Lally and myself both believed coming into the game is that the Steelers were going to come into this and basically say, Artie Burns, all we're going to tell you to do is play man coverage. Every play, we're going to tell you to watch somebody no matter where they go. You take them out the play. And I think that the Steelers were coming in with the idea that they could confuse Brady by putting Artie on someone and letting the rest of the defense work around that. But what happened was when the switch needed to be made and the motion happened, the defense switched it to a zone. They went on a man. And when they did, they forgot to account for the fact that Artie Burns wouldn't be covering his side of the field because he had to trail Josh Gordon because he was told only follow the play man no matter what happens. Yeah. So and you look at the alignment on the field now, you know, there could have been a mistake by Sean Davis in where he was, and I do think that, you know, technically if you wanted to point to a mistake, it would be on Sean Davis. But I think what Tom was getting at is like, look, you look at the alignment of that play. Hayden had a deep third on the left side. Davis had the middle deep third, and then the right deep third is where Hogan was, and that's where Burns vacated because he was in man coverage. And that was the thing. Now, I think that what was supposed to happen was Davis in that situation would sort of play a deep half,
right,
to cover that side of the field, and that way they wouldn't just leave a third of the field wide open. But when you look at that situation, you're playing the Patriots. You're going to have a lot of communication that you already have to do. Now you're adding an extra layer for it. Now we're not just making the normal switch into a cover three zone. We're making the switch plus Artie Burns. I think that was just too much on the plate of this secondary. And they immediately said, you know what? We're not going to play this game. Let's just, this isn't Artie Burns' fault. He did what he was supposed to do, but this plan's not going to work. Let's get Cody Sensabaugh in there because we're comfortable with him understanding all the switches, and we don't have to give him special instructions. So I think that's what happened there. It was just that there was a miscommunication because of the game plan that they had going in, and it just didn't work. And so when a game plan doesn't work, instead of playing around and being stubborn and saying, we were going to stick to this game plan, like so many people get on Tomlin for doing, he was like, you know what? Nah, let's get this done. Get this out the way. And you saw how it worked because the Patriots only scored a field goal for the rest of the game after that.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, I mean, like you said, it looked like the Steelers did kind of abandon their plan. I talked to Matt Williamson earlier this week, and he was saying, look, this plan for Artie Burns was him to play a lot of minutes in this game, and he took all the first-team reps in practice. And so the fact that he only played three plays was not the plan coming in. But that brings me to my next point, right? Because we also saw very little Cam Sutton. We saw no Jordan Dangerfield.
Right.
And so it keeps getting said, I keep hearing this, Tomlin outcoached Belichick, right? Or the Steelers outcoached the Patriots. But when you consider the fact that their plan coming in, they abandoned three defensive plays in the game. I mean, did the Steelers outcoach the Patriots? What happened in this football game that led to the Steelers, like you said, holding the Patriots to just 3 points after that play?
One thing that I broke down in War Room, that released on Tuesday for our site at DK Pittsburgh Sports, I was looking at how the Steelers were disguising everything. And this is where I think defensively they outcoached the Patriots, was that they were lining up in various coverage schemes. They were showing, hey, we have one single high safety. We're showing cover three and switching to cover two, or switching to cover six, or showing cover two and switching to man defense on a cover one. And in those moments, each time they were doing that, they weren't just making the switch. They were adding an extra layer of double-teaming Rob Gronkowski, double-teaming Julian Edelman, and said, hey, if you're going to win, you're going to beat us with a guy that you're not as comfortable making a play. And the Steelers were going to put someone they were confident on those lesser other receivers so that it wasn't just an easy completion. And you saw that. A lot of guys really stepped up. Vince Williams was all over the field. There was the one time they had a comeback route by James White, and James White couldn't get any separation on Vince Williams. He was all over it. Brady ended up sailing the third down pass because of the pressure from Watt. But Vince Williams was closing down. There was no easy passing window. And I think that's where the out coaching comes from. Because you know what? You could come into a game with a certain plan and then have a backup plan. And if the backup plan works, that means you did your job.
Sure.
And it's important to have those backup plans, because if you come up with a plan and it doesn't work, and then you look stupid, because then you're stuck doing the same thing over and over and over, and then the other team can just pick you apart. And the Steelers, they immediately said, nope, we're going to this, and the Patriots could not figure it out. I could tell you on several occasions, especially on the interception, if there's a specific review where they have the I forget what the name of the camera is, but the floating camera that's above. So that's right behind Brady. So you can see everything he sees, and you can see they show cover three because Sean Davis is playing deep in the middle of the field. Josh Gordon is in the slot to the left, and Morgan Burnett's playing like a linebacker right over the center. And as soon as the ball is snapped, Davis goes from his single high. He switches to the left half of the field. Edmonds backs up. He takes the other half. So now they're in a cover two. But at the same time, Morgan Burnett is flying to Josh Gordon and taking it away. So now Tom Brady thinking, okay, they're in cover three. I'll hit the seam. Oh, the seam's taken away. Oh, that's gone. Oh, I can't hit that over the top because they're playing cover two. And then all of a sudden, the pressure collapsed on him. And now he has to try and throw it away. And that led to the bad throwaway and the interception by Joe Hayden. But it was moments like that they kept predicting where the Patriots would be or where Tom Brady would be trying to go. And it just confused him enough to never let him take advantage of them, especially in the big moments. I mean, and you think back, the reason that was the only touchdown, every time he got close to the end zone, there was no one wide open just walking around in the back that Brady missed. Everybody was covered. He would have had to throw a perfect pass to get to make a score happen.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I mean, you're absolutely right. I think Brady was – you can look. If you guys have the game taped out there, if you just go watch the TV. You can even see it on the TV camera, even if you can't see the defenders. Look at Brady and look at how he comes off his first read so quickly because he's not – the read he thought he had, he doesn't have, and now he's trying to go somewhere else. How crazy is it that we're talking about this? You know, we're talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers defense out-thinking, out-playing Tom Brady and the Patriots, when 2 weeks ago, this team had no answers for Keenan Allen. A week ago, they tried a bunch of stuff against Jared Cook, had no answers for that. And now here we are, and this Steeler team is outplaying the Patriots. I felt like, you know, for me, one of the best things about this football game and why I give Tomlin so much credit for this game is it felt like it was a team playing above itself. You had a bunch of guys playing their best football of the year. I saw your grades in your War Room column. You gave everyone, you know, above the line ratings in that. It felt like everyone in this game played their best game of the year or one of their best games of the year.
Yeah, I mean, you look, especially defensively. I mean, the defensive line, it wasn't just that they were creating pressure. They were staying in their rush lanes so that Brady could not step up in the pocket. Both Tuitt and Hayward, though neither registered a sack, were just collapsing the middle of the line and not letting Brady do that step up in the pocket thing that he always loves to do to kind of give him a better chance to look up the field. They were forcing him to run wide, and now you're forcing an old man Brady to stretch the field out horizontally, and that's not what his strength is. I mean, it never really was his strength before, but even less now now that he's what, 41. But you look at how they played. You look at how TJ Watt played. And how he was just off the ball all the time, just whipping Marcus Cannon play after play after play. Joe Hayden, there's nothing else you can say about that guy. You know, early in the year, you and I were debating it whether the defensive MVP should be Mike Hilton or Joe Hayden. And Joe Hayden, you were right, has won out in the second half.
Yeah.
But even Mike Hilton, you know, they said they were going to bench him. He was out there for 38 snaps. And when he was out there, he was tackling, he was running, he was not leaving open targets. There was the one play, I think they hit Chris Hogan in the flat on a third down in the red zone, and they thought, oh, we could catch them off guard. Hogan's out in space. But, oh, Mike Hilton's right on it, got the tackle, short. He didn't have any yards left to catch. That was very disciplined and smart defense from this Steelers team. And I know everyone's saying, well, where was that in the Raiders? But it's like, you know what? You know, it takes time for stuff to click. You know, I brought this up earlier in the year. I said, you know, the middle of the defense was going to have to figure itself out and learn how to play with each other. And it certainly seems like they're starting to do that more and more. Yeah. And understanding where each other's strengths are, learning how to trust each other. And especially, I saw much improvement from Morgan Burnett. I thought against the Raiders, he was looking like a complete waste of a signing. And in this game, he was quite relevant.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought Terrell Edmonds, same thing. I thought Terrell Edmonds had very good game in this one. Very, very sure tackler, physical around the football. Yeah, you know, one thing I've liked about Terrell Edmonds lately is, you know, early in the year, he seemed a little hesitant or just, you know, not sure of where to go. And you know, you're going to see that from a rookie at times. Didn't seem that way on Sunday. I thought he played really well as well.
And that should be very encouraging that this guy, he played every single snap in the game, Tony.
Yeah.
I mean, defensively. And there were several times when the Patriots motioned, he didn't look like a deer in the headlights. He didn't say, okay, he looked like, okay, they're doing that. I know where they're going. I know my job. The one third down stop they had when Tom Brady, they called a screen pass to Edelman, and they motioned him over into the bunch. Edmonds jumped right in there. He stuck his chest into Chris Hogan, said, and blew up the entire play, held up Edelman, and then the rest of the team swarmed to the ball. Those kind of moments, they're unsung, but they're huge when you look at the film and the integrity of the defense, because they made sure, like, you're not just going to pick at us and get these easy plays that you're used to getting to extend your drives. Those moments are huge. Terrell Edmonds was huge. I thought Sean Davis also had a very good game, despite that early touchdown that, you know, you could say is on him, but I think it was just the planning is just too much to try and put on everyone with the Artie Burns situation. And that's why I didn't give Artie Burns a bad grade, because I do believe that they told him to stick to man no matter what. And that makes the touchdown not his fault. But you know, all in all, great tackling. You know, I think I only saw three missed tackles by the Steelers in the game, and great coverage. And on the flip side, the offense, I mean, the running game. I'm pretty sure they did not come into this game thinking they were going to be able to run the ball like that. But when they saw how well the counter tosses were working, the wham runs were working, they said, "Oh, let's feed Jalen Samuels." And 19 carries for 142 yards later, the Patriots had no answer, that's another point of being out coached. And I'm not saying that Mike Tomlin came out there and challenged, because everyone judges coaching by challenges and all this stuff. But the Patriots were an undisciplined football team. They had 14 penalties, could have been called for quite a lot more compared to, I think it was the Steelers too. Yeah. And those are the things that, if it was the reverse, I'd hear a lot of Mike Tomlin is unprepared, and Bill Belichick, you see that they don't have those penalties. They look prepared. They're in their coverage positions. They're running the ball well and picking their spots well at the run game. And this would be bad on Mike Tomlin, but this was the reverse. This was Mike Tomlin did those things. So yeah. that's why I say Mike Tomlin outcoached Bill Belichick. I'm not saying he's the better coach for all time. All I'm saying is in this game, his team was more prepared, more disciplined, and their plan confused Tom Brady, who is the best processor of defenses that I've ever seen.
Hey, we got to go to break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about that, Chris. I want to talk to you about those penalties and kind of the feeling coming out of this game. So many people saying, the Patriots played down to the Steelers or that they just had a bad game. We'll talk to Chris about that right after this. All right, back here with Christopher Carter of DK Pittsburgh Sports. Chris, coming out of this football game now, and I'm starting to hear, some of the talk around the national media about this game, and a lot of people saying, look, this isn't the same Patriots team, and the penalties that they had were so uncharacteristic of this team, and it shows you that this is not the same Belichick style of team. But, I watched the game, and yes, they did have a lot of uncharacteristic penalties, but so many of those were false starts, and those false starts were in large part because, number one, Heinz Field was rocking on Sunday. And the pass rush in this football game got there. And the way I knew it got there is Brady does not like to be hit. And he starts feeling, when the pass rush is getting there, he starts feeling a phantom rush. And that there's no pressure, but he still got those happy feet trying to get rid of the football. What did you see?
I definitely saw that the pressure getting to him. There's definitely, when you're talking about the penalties and when you're talking about the things they're saying, playing out, the notion that the Patriots played down to the Steelers is silly. The Patriots didn't play down to anybody. They showed that they weren't that good. I think one thing that this offense, if you look back at the last three games, Tom Brady had 6 touchdowns and an interception. He was lighting people up. Even in the Dolphins game, they really, by all schematics, they beat the Dolphins, but they gave up the last miracle play with Kenyon Drake beating Gronkowski up the sideline. But so this isn't like this is just some Patriots team that's just incapable of winning anymore. They have the same people that know how to orchestrate stuff. But this is what happens when you don't invest into your team. And the Patriots have long believed we can win with anybody. That's why they let Chandler Jones go. That's why they let Jamie Collins go. That's why they let Deion Lewis go. That's why they let Stephen Ridley go. Guys that had proven themselves in their system. That's why they let Malcolm Butler and Logan Ryan go. And look at those guys. Now, Malcolm Butler's not having a great year, but you look at Deion Lewis. When the Titans beat them, he said, that's what you get when you don't pay people. Stephen Ridley, even though he only had three carries, he looked good out there. And I know that win had to feel good for him because of the way that they treated him. And it seems to be across the board, if you're a guy that thinks that you're worth a big payday and you're not Tom Brady or you're not Rob Gronkowski, they feel like they don't need you. And they showed, yeah, you do. You needed to pay Nate Solder, even though he wasn't even that good of a tackle. But Marcus Cannon, he was just getting whipped almost every play. And again, there were several times they could have called holding and let it go. That I think that would have even penalized the Patriots more in a lot of plays. So,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So those are the situations. It's like, look, if you believe that your coaching is that good, that you coach up these guys that don't have the blue chip talent, the top tier talent to win these matchups, and you think you can do that, go right ahead and do that. But when it doesn't work, it's going to come back to bite you, and that's when people can criticize you. It's the same reason that when I criticize Tomlin or Fichtner, or what used to be Haley, because Fichtner just started, or Keith Butler about situations they put the team in, it's the same thing with this. Yeah, they thought these guys would work in these situations. They clearly didn't. They didn't have a backup plan to help them out. That's why they lost the game. This isn't about, oh, they saw the Steelers and thought and underestimated them or anything ridiculous like that. They got beat. The Steelers are a better team. You know, they may not have a better record right now, but I believe coming into this game that the Steelers, and I thought from the door, when this season started, even after they lost, they lost to the Ravens, even after they lost to the Chiefs, after they lost to the Raiders, I still picked this team to win because I'm like, that team, they will get up for this Patriots game and they will find a way to win because they know that they're better than this team. They know they got robbed last year when they schematically they beat the Patriots, but like the Dolphins game for the Patriots just a week or two ago, the ending just had a crazy bounce that didn't go their way. So I don't buy into these narratives about playing down. The Patriots got beat. The thing is they can always rebound, but they got to look for some answers.
On the offensive side, I want to talk to you about James Washington. You and I talked at training camp, and James Washington at camp made a name for himself for making combat catch after combat catch. Now, we've talked about guys playing above themselves or playing so much better in this football game. Finally, we saw James Washington show up in this game. My hope is that he can continue this going forward. We see this, we saw it against the Patriots, and, unfortunately on that drive where he had his big catches, he had the one down the sideline and the catch and run, that's the drive that Boswell missed the field goal. So, didn't lead to points in this game, but James Washington starts showing that in these next couple games. I think the Steeler offense can get back to scoring the 30 plus it was during that winning streak.
I mean, certainly a lot of it just has to depend on, can they find some consistency? And I could tell you, if you go back and watch the replay of him making that 32 yard grab on the sideline, watch the dance from Vince Williams when he's like, it's a catch.
Yeah.
And just watch how almost the entire sideline gets up and like moves towards Washington as he's getting up with the ball. They were excited because they know that guy could play.
I'm so excited that he finally got it going now because, training camp was – it was the James Washington show, some of those practices where he was making catches. Or even over guys like Joe Hayden in the corner of the end zone, he was tremendous, but we just haven't seen it in the regular season. All right, last question here, Chris. And this is the big one that everyone's asking in Pittsburgh. Was this just a one game, I don't want to call it a fluke, but, this team certainly played up to the Patriots. They had a lot to play for. Their back was against the wall. They were trying to save their season. They were trying to get revenge on what happened a year ago. Did this team enter itself back into the contenders in the AFC? Should they be considered a contender again, even after losing to the Raiders and having that three-game losing streak?
I mean, absolutely. There's not a single team in the NFL that can say that they're head over heels above the they're way above the line over the Steelers. I mean, look at their losses against the top teams, either the Chiefs and the Chargers. They lost to the Chiefs by 5. They lost to the Chargers by 3. And in neither game can you say that the Steelers played particularly to the top of their ability. I think, especially defensively, if the Steelers can come out, identify the strengths of those offenses and do a better job. If they could take away Keenan Allen the way they took away Rob Gronkowski, if they could take away Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill the way they did in this game and find ways to at least confuse Patrick Mahomes, because he will throw interceptions. We've seen that. Especially you're seeing defenses sort of emerge in this state of the NFL. Those are the signs that show you like the defense can play. Now the only thing is, can they be consistent? I've said this for the past few years. This is what happens when you have top tier talent for like a decade, and then you have to rebuild and you have to go find those pieces, and it takes time to have hit and misses to build great defenses. But this defense is extremely young. They can play to this level, and I think it's the same thing with the offense. I saw some etches of leadership and of feistiness. You saw Jalen Samuels on one of his early runs when he was starting to realize that the Patriots couldn't touch him. When he sat down on the Patriots bench and he didn't get up. He didn't
up.
They had to push him. They said, get off our bench. And he was just like, I'm doing this all day. And then later in the game, I think it was in the third quarter or maybe in the fourth quarter when he had another big run. And I forget which Patriot, but I think it was one of the McCourty twins, and they got up in his face, and he was letting them know. And who comes over and grabs him but rookie James Washington, who says, hey, man, let's get back in the huddle. So you got one rookie being hyper-confident and feeling like he should fear no man. You have another rookie saying, let's be aware of the game situation and keep the focus. I mean, that's some good signs that they got some guys there that are ready and can play at this level and are excited to play at this level. I think the Steelers, Dale Lolley said on the final word on WPXI here in the local NBC station here in Pittsburgh on Sunday night, he said the Steelers are definitely one of the class of the AFC. There's no team in this conference that they can't beat, and we will find out on this Sunday if there's no team in the NFC, in the league that can beat them if they, you know, depending on how they play the Saints. Because to me, the Saints are the class of the NFC. So it's going to be very interesting. I don't think anyone should count the Steelers out.
Yeah, huge, huge game coming up against the Saints on Sunday. All right, thanks again, Chris. Let people know where they can find your work.
As always, you can find my work at dkpittsburghsports.com. Right now, we have some Christmas specials going on. You can get your subscription to the site. Right now, it's a $40 subscription for a year. We have different prices and different deals. You can try us out for a dollar for a month. But also, right now, if you get a full subscription for a year, you get our Cartoon Cannon book where we have, I think it's 52 or 32 specialized drawings of famous Pittsburgh sports movements. It's a great gift for your Pittsburgh sports fan that you want to get your stuff to. And hey, you can always follow my stuff at Carter Critiques. I do film breakdown, Steelers breakdowns every week, and you know, come draft season, I'll be doing that too. So again, my name is Chris Carter, NFL analyst, DK Pittsburgh Sports. Keep listening to Tony because he does great stuff on this podcast, and I listen every week.
Thanks, Chris. And yeah, guys, head on over to DK Pittsburgh Sports. Sign up. You can get, you know, that the breakdown that Chris gave of that Artie Burns play. He's got that and more. I mean, he's got animated GIFs in there as well. Head on over to DK Pittsburgh Sports. Sign up. All right, Chris, thanks again.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, thanks again to Chris for coming on. Always love having him on, especially after a big win like that against the Patriots. And you heard Chris there talk about the Artie Burns play and what happened with the Steelers' game plan and how they kind of, not that they threw the game plan out, but they had to throw parts of it out, the parts that included Artie Burns, because they realized early on in this game it's just not going to work. The communication isn't there. Let's change it up. Let's go back to the personnel that we've been using all year and see if we can have some success that way. And boy, did they ever. That's why I got to say, I mean, this I said it on Monday. I said it on Tuesday. I'm going to say it again today. This is one of Mike Tomlin's best coaching performances, and I hope we continue to see that going forward. They're going to need another one this week against the New Orleans Saints in New Orleans, a place where that team is scoring 30-plus with regularity. All right, that'll do it for me today. Thank you all for listening. If you want to leave feedback, SteelerCountry@gmail.com, the email address. You can follow me on Twitter @SteelerCountry, and I'll be back tomorrow for more Locked On Steelers.